Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and pop culture collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to our show of dream chasers and wealth makers. We are thrilled to be back in studio today with the new episode of the Zandbergen Report. I'm proud to bring in the movers, shakers, and difference makers who are passionate about sharing what they've learned and what you need to know today. And today, I'm pleased to have in studio Paul, a name you may be familiar with.
I was trying to pronounce it. It's a handful there.
Well, let's welcome to the show Tim Zandbergen of FMN Benefits. Tim, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, brother.
So I think we should probably clarify so that everybody knows that we are not distant cousins. We are not father, son. We are actually brothers who actually once worked together in the field of employee benefits many.
All right. Now, who's the baby brother and who's the older one? That's all I can't tell here.
Well, that's for us to know and for everyone else to try to find out.
Okay. All right.
So in any event. So, Tim, world of employee benefits, things have changed since I got out of that business many years ago, and things are changing, I know, every year. I know we had Obamacare years ago, and we'll talk just about that just a little bit, because you say that we mentioned that things haven't really changed there much, and but at least we'll give people an idea of what it is. There seems to be a constant complaint of my premiums have gone up, and that goes on every year. And maybe we can discuss what's happening there, what's going on with the carriers. And let's also clarify that your specialty is in employee benefits. So not individual, but for businesses, small to medium sized businesses who are providing medical insurance to their staff. Correct?
Correct. I do a little individual, a little Medicare, but for the most part, it is employee benefits.
All right. Well, you open yourself up. We may have to talk about Medicare, so be careful what you say.
I said a little.
All right. So let's talk about what's happening in the world of group medical insurance today.
Yeah. So just a look back as far as the benefits and then what rolled out in 2014, the infamous Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. So it's been 6 years in the making, 6 years out there, and I think the word affordable is still being questioned if that's ever going to happen. Yes, the rates continue to go up. Benefits continue to be slowly chipped away, a little bit less. And every year it's usually single-digit increases on the benefits. At the same time, on the cost, and the benefits seem to decrease a little bit as well. Part of that is trying to manage that cost. So the carriers trying to keep the premium down by pushing more cost onto the members as they use the benefits.
Yeah. So there's typically, and as an employer myself, we see there's a trade-off, right? So if there's an effort to keep in premiums the same, it's usually a reduction in benefit. That still seems to be the game, correct?
Yes. That's correct.
So what can people expect this year? Are there any significant changes?
2021 is bringing on still single-digit increases. If they've been in the market now in small groups, so small group is defined as 99 or less employees. So those are the groups that are really impacted by Obamacare. They are no longer medically underwritten. Those rates are driven by their age and employer zip code. Or groups over 100 and more are more medically underwritten and are more still made the old way or pre-Obamacare when they're medically underwritten and the costs and benefits are designed by the employer, or the benefits are designed by the employer, cost is really utilization. A group with a lot of claims, that group is going to pay more than another group that doesn't have a lot of claims.
That's only for 100 and more, correct?
Correct. So under 100, so 99, basically all the carriers have divided up. Well, the state of California is divided up to 19 regions. Orange County is number 18. So the carriers now, they rate their cost of doing business in each region. So in Orange County, what does it cost for Anthem, Blue Cross, or Blue Shield of California to do business in Orange County? Premiums coming in versus money going out paying claims. And that's how some of the rates are generated.
Anything different in 2021 with regards to the design of plans, or anything added, anything taken away?
No, they're still the metallic tiers. So platinum is the best, gold, silver, and bronze. They still use that metallic naming schedule. And the benefits are still defined by that platinum 10% coinsurance and gold 20% coinsurance, silver 30%, and the bronze at 40% of that coinsurance. So by design, the Affordable Care Act is a ratio of the total cost and then the benefit within that range. So what continues to happen, and it's I haven't been able to get an answer, is every year the out-of-pocket max goes up. So let's say the out-of-pocket max is what you pay per calendar year as the max you'd pay for claims. And if you reach that threshold, you would be covered at 100%. You wouldn't have to pay any more of your claims. Well, that number continues to increase on all levels of the plan benefits, but no one can tell me why that is increasing. Part of it, I believe it gives them a bigger range to have that 20%. So 20% of zero cost to a 4,000 max out of pocket, you get a list of benefits and copays. But if they squeeze that out to 4,500 or 5,000, then those copays can go up a little bit more to keep us within that range of percentage of cost.
Okay. Is the possibility? Have you heard anything? We've just had an election. Anything going on with foreseeable big changes as Obamacare/ACA going to stay in place? What's happening there?
It does sound like everything's status quo. Everybody has those speculations as Biden is bringing his board on, his people. Nothing is really hard-coded at this time of certain situations that are going to happen. You know, the talk of socialized medicine is still talked about. Biden did talk about adding a public option. So I believe that would just expand something like a Medi-Cal like we have in the state of California to allow more people to come in. So they get their benefits next to nothing for cost. And I think that's the way they're going to help offset the cost. So unfortunately for employees, as their income goes up, they get bumped out of the Medi-Cal. So right now it's no cost to them. And then they get bumped out, and now they're paying hundreds of dollars maybe per paycheck or per month that they were not paying before. So it always has that kind of that hurt, is when you start making more money, then you get bumped out of that free Medi-Cal cost. Mm-hmm. So potentially whatever Biden rolls out, he may raise that dollar amount. So if it's, I don't know the exact number, I don't deal with that, but let's say if it's $40,000 for a family of four to be able to stay on Medi-Cal, maybe he'll bump that up to a higher income amount to be able to keep those benefits.
Does COBRA still exist?
COBRA still exists. It's still highly managed, and there's a lot of regulation using COBRA. The employer with 20 or more employees is responsible to hire an administrator to manage that. If it's less than 20, then the carrier manages that. So as an employee loses their coverage, termination, voluntary or involuntary, reduction of hours, then the carrier offers them the continuation coverage, which is exactly what they have now, the same benefit structure. And then the more popular note on COBRA is, why does COBRA cost so much?
Yeah. Well,
it doesn't cost more than what the employer is currently paying for you. It's just the fact the employer is not paying a portion of your cost. So you're a couple hundred dollars a month deduction is what you were paying your portion. And when you get the COBRA bill, that is the full amount. So the difference of what you're paying to the COBRA premium is what the employer was paying in on your behalf.
Isn't there like an admin charge tagged on top? Isn't that part of it?
It is. Right? It's 2% if it's, so it's 20 or more. It's 10% if it's 19 or less. So it's a little bit more, but for the most part, 2% for the 20 or more employees.
Okay. Has anything changed with COBRA because of COVID? Have they extended it? Have they done anything along those lines?
Well, yeah, if you don't want to talk about COVID across the board in the healthcare industry a lot, they laxed a lot of the guidelines as far as the days that you can actually elect COBRA. It was 60 days from the loss of contact, loss of coverage. They've softened that. They've extended that a little bit. They give them a lot more grace period on premiums. If you can't make it, then they don't just drop your coverage. They let you go more than 30 days without payment. And that's generally speaking across the board, just COVID general on what the carriers were doing to help employers. Even if the employees were not working, traditionally you have to work to be qualified, minimum of 30 hours a week. But during this shutdown and not working, the 30 hours traditionally required to have benefits, the carriers pretty much said, don't ask, don't tell, keep your employees on, just pay the bill. We're not ever going to audit you to show that these actual employees worked to be eligible for those benefits.
So these COVID, I don't know, leniencies, as you've discussed, those are really carrier driven. They haven't been, that's not a federal thing.
Correct. It was all carrier driven. I think in their eyes, they want the money coming in. They don't want to have everybody losing coverage or on COBRA, and then the administrative work to bring them back on if they're rehired. Mm-hmm. I guess the carriers were saying, hey, let's just have them pay premiums. We'll get the money and no one will probably be making claims because the hospitals aren't even taking anybody.
Got it. Do you see that? Seen anything different lately with the economy seeming to pick up? Now, with that said, it seems like we may be going down for another lockdown, but anything different in the last couple of months?
No, they've tightened up all those leniencies on all those billings and employment and stuff like that. So it's getting kind of back to normal now.
How about HSAs? Are those still available and are they popular?
They are available. They're not too popular because the cost savings of a health savings account that's attached to a high deductible health plan, most people don't see the value in those. They want to be able to fund and invest the health savings account, which gives them a federal tax credit, and they could use that money to reimburse themselves. But the cost of those plans isn't discounted enough to help offset the cost of using those plans. So those plans by design have no copays. It's all a percentage, and usually a larger deductible. So any sort of premium savings to go from a traditional PPO with copays for office visits and copays for prescriptions to basically a 20 or 30% of the cost of whatever that is, then there really isn't much savings there. So they're not really highly used. And unfortunately, most people who do have them don't open a health savings account, so they don't take advantage of that benefit. They just like the lower premium. So they're pretty much self-insuring when they enroll in an HSA.
Yeah. So I realized I asked that question and we kind of backdoored answered it. So I think we should take a second and really start from the top and define what an HSA is and how it is required. If you have one, it can only be coupled with a, you know what, and let's go down that path.
Okay. So let's just define what is available. So there's an HMO, health maintenance organization, which is required to have a primary care physician, and we use medical groups, and your PCP, primary care physician, is your gatekeeper. You have your traditional PPO, or of course you could self-refer in network with contracted providers, out of network with non-contracted providers. So the HSA, HDHP, health deductible, high deductible health plan, is a PPO, same network of providers, just the plan benefits are structured different to allow the attachment of the health savings account, which you could put into, I believe, for 2021, the numbers are the same. I think it's 3,000 or 3,100 per individual, double that for a family. So what they want to do is they want you to fund that health savings account, get a federal tax credit for doing that, and then use that money to pay your claims. So they want to just try to help have you save some money by giving you that tax credit for the money that you put in that health savings account. And the benefit of the health savings account is it does roll over. So it's not use it or lose it, like a FSA, a flexible spending account. So an HSA, the health savings account, it does roll over. So if an individual who puts $3,100 in 1 year, they don't have any claims, or they just pay it out of pocket, make sure they can put another $3,100 in there. Now they have $6,200, and you could potentially, and you get the federal tax credit each year for that $3,100, and then you could potentially use that money for LASIK or maybe some sort of oral surgery if you need to get implants or anything of that nature. So, and on that note, it's not just for medical. The benefit is attached to a medical plan, but you can use those dollars for dental and vision as well.
Yeah, I'll add something to that. I actually am a utilizer of the HSA concept, primarily because we're not big users of medical plans. So the high deductible, while intimidating, we don't often get there. So I'm just kind of used to paying out of pocket. And then I think the other benefit of the HSA is, one, the deduction. So for those who are looking to get the most deductions they can each year, either through their retirement plans, whatever else might be available, the HSA adds a little bit more. And then if you don't utilize the funds during your working years, that can roll over into a supplemental retirement account where you can take the money out. It's an older age. Instead of 59, I want to say it's 65, I believe, where you can start taking the money out taxable, or use it still tax-free for medical expenses. So great plan. So let's talk about what else you do besides medical insurance. So what are you the champion of?
Oh, you mean outside of my 100 hours a week?
Yeah.
Keeping people healthy and managing their benefit cost. I do like to ride a bike every once in a while.
Well, by the time people see this show, I believe your avatar is going to be your one of your cycling pictures. And I apologize, with a danger of working at home, if you can hear anything, this, my dog has fallen asleep and is having a nightmare. So he's crying. Oh boy, COVID. So talk to people, like kind of walk us through what's your daily routine on your biking.
Daily routine. Wake up, have my cup of coffee, look out the window, see if it's, you know, sunny or warm or cold, or look at the temperature, and I jump on my bike and ride anywhere from 1 to 3 hours. It's usually Monday through Friday, you know, before work, or depending on the time of year, I'll do a little bit of work and then ride for 1 to 3 hours, and then come back and do some more work. The home office is pretty equipped, so I can do some work early in the morning, before the rides. So yeah, during the week, it's mostly on my road bike, just because of the weather and the temperature and the sun. If the sun doesn't come up early enough, and the weekends, I like to ride the mountain bike.
Yeah. What kind of races have you done recently?
I raced up in Big Bear. I did 100K about a month ago, a little over 6 hours doing that. And then the following week, I did up in Big Bear again, a cross country race, which is traditionally shorter, about 2 hour race. They had a really fun ride on Saturday. So Saturday we did 120 miles, about 12,000 feet of climbing on the road bike. And we threw in some dirt roads on the road bike, which is a new kind of riding. It's called gravel riding. So you put a little bigger tires on and you take your road bike and then you ride on the road, on the pavement. Then you jump on some hiking trails. So nothing like a traditional mountain bike where you're rolling over rocks and doing more aggressive stuff, but the stuff you see people walking on for the most part. So we throw that in just to make it a little more exciting, and just give you more options to ride and stuff. So that's what we did on Saturday. We started in Costa Mesa, worked our way through El Moro, through Peters Canyon, to Santiago Oaks, popped out in Corona, rode up the backside of Saddleback called Skyline, and then drop down the trail called Black Star. That was about 5 hours and 8,000 feet of climbing. And then we went south through O'Neill Park and then through Talega, back down to PCH, finished up in El Moro, and so back to Costa Mesa. So about 8.5 hours to ride.
That sounds like a day in the park for Paul. I'm sure that's a regular routine for our Paul. So 120 miles, 8.5 hour ride. And so this is always cracks me up. So you rode, you didn't take Sunday off, right? You rode again, you had to do a recovery ride.
Yeah. Yeah. The legs won't move unless you just get that blood pumping.
I don't think anyone's going to believe that. So how long did you ride on Sunday?
Just an hour.
Just an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Just to get things moving again. Otherwise you're like a stick man. Nothing wants to move, especially when you get a little bit older, especially at your age, Bart, you know, when you get a little bit older, then you gotta have that recovery ride to get that blood flowing and loosen those muscles up.
I get that. So on average, how many miles a week do you ride, including those big weekend rides?
Between 200 and 250. In my world of cycling, that's about average.
Yeah.
For age to be a competitive cyclist, either on the road or mountain, that's about the average.
Yeah. All right. So let's finish up before we close up. So describe your daily nutrition to fuel that sort of exercise and output.
It kind of depends. On easier days, I don't eat too much. I just use the glycogen stores in my body just to fuel that. But if I'm going to go a little bit harder, when I need some more quicker fuel, there's plenty of supplements that I usually just put it in my water bottle. I like to consume my calories in my water bottle. There's pros and cons and discussions on if that's the right way to do it or not. But I like to do it that way. The water tastes good and it digests quicker and it goes right to your muscles. And then they have those infamous little goo tablets. That's like liquidy peanut butter that you put in. Those are about 100 calories that you could digest pretty easily as well because it's already a little bit of liquid and goes right to your muscles pretty quick. It doesn't sit in your gut. And you don't want to eat too much because it draws the blood away from your muscles that are actually working really hard to keep you moving to digest your food. So you just kind of trickle in your food, you know, throughout the hour. You try to consume about 250 calories an hour.
And but how much are you burning an hour? Like 1,000?
Potentially. Yeah. Like on my ride, I burned 5,500 calories on the 8-hour ride.
How much weight did you lose on the ride?
About 2.5 pounds. I weighed myself the next day. Even though I ate and drank, I felt great the whole ride. I had a good dinner. And the next morning when I was on the scale, I was only down 2.5 pounds. So that wasn't too bad. I've been 5 pounds or more sometimes.
And you can make that up in a couple of days?
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to make sure you cover either on bike riding, supplements, nutrition, or benefits?
Well, I wanted to talk about the cost of healthcare. Everybody seems to ask, why does healthcare cost so much? And why is it always going up and everything? So I just came across some stats that I wanted to share just to let people know it's we're kind of inflicting this wound on ourselves. For instance, in the United States, so as far as obesity, out of the top 10 countries in the world, where do you think United States falls for the population of obesity?
What percentage of the U.S. population is obese? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, that's what I was trying to say, yes. And then where do we stand as far as in the whole world? Are we the worst, the best?
Yeah, so I'm going to say we're one of the worst. And I want to say obese has a definition, right? It's over like X percent body fat or something along those lines.
Yes, I don't know that exact number. That's a good point. Yeah. Or whatever they consider.
But definition of obese, I'm going to say 30%.
Okay, and where do we rank in the whole world compared to England, Canada, Germany, Mexico?
First, highest.
You are correct. We're 38.2% of the population is considered obese, and we are number one.
Not far off.
Most obese people.
That's sad.
That is sad. That is very sad.
Just overall health, right?
Yeah.
It's sad that that's happened. Okay, so is that your point? That's what's driving medical costs up?
Yes, that's part of it. And just a lot of claims, claim issues, patients misclaiming, doctors are claiming, making claims that for services not performed, patients requesting services that don't need to happen. So they just need to be better consumers of their benefits.
And we have no idea what the results of COVID are yet, right? On the medical premium for COVID cases.
No, the government picked up, I think that's why the numbers are so high, because everyone wants to claim it as a COVID, because then the federal government reimburses them. So that's a whole other discussion on that number and what that means. But yeah, I don't know if that's going to hit all local carriers that hard.
Yeah. All right, Tim, how can anyone get a hold of you with questions or help?
Yes, they can call me office at 949-455-0300 and ask for me, Tim Z. We have two Tims in the office. And since Zan Bergen is a tongue twister at some point, Tim Z is my my handle. So they'll know who to send it to.
How about a website or email or anything like that?
tzanbergen@fmncc.com.
All right. Well, Tim, thanks for being on the show. It's a very current subject, as people are always interested in or uninterested in the increase in medical insurance costs, and good to know why. Paul, I think he wants to chime in.
The question everybody wanted to know is, what's it like being Bart Zandbergen's brother?
Sure they do.
Well, life could be a lot worse.
There you go. Wow.
He was kind. He gave me the opportunity to start this business, and thanks to him, I am where I am right now as far as this business goes. So it's very good.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. Thank you very much.
There you go. You're welcome.
All right. Wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for everyone who has tuned in. We look forward to being back in the studio again next week. Cheers. Awesome.
Thanks, everyone. Everybody. Thank you.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting podcast.bartzandbergen.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show, or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. The contents of this podcast episode do not constitute an offer of securities or a solicitation of an offer to buy securities, and may not be relied upon in making an investment decision related to any investment offering Access Wealth Management LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Access does not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the information contained herein. Opinions are our current opinions and are subject to change without notice. Prices, quotes, rates are subject to change without notice. Generally, investments are not FDIC insured, not bank guaranteed, and may lose value. Brokerage services are offered through Tessera Capital, member FINRA.